So they put the white flag up. They told the Israelis, we are surrendering. Please stop firing. Everybody went down into the hold, but the firing did continue for several minutes after that, even though on the messages the organizers were pleading in every language available to them, to the Israelis, please send medical help, please stop firing. We have people who are dead, we have people who are fatally injured, they need immediate attention. The medical help didn't really come till about 2-3 hours later when the Israelis started to helicopter out the dead and the wounded.
And what happened next after they
decoupled? We were held on the ship by the Israeli soldiers for around 24 hours. Now, my timings are a bit rough because we hadn't slept for days in anticipation of this attack, especially the media. Mm-hmm. We'd been working overtime, trying to cover the story, trying to get as much attention on it as possible, so that if an attack did happen, the world's eyes would be focused and they would see exactly what happened. So we were held for roughly about 24 hours in the ship. During that period, people weren't even allowed to go to the toilet without pleading and begging soldiers to allow them. And it was entirely up to the whim and the desire of the soldier whether a person would be allowed. So you had fully grown men begging to be allowed to use the toilet, begging to be allowed to get something to eat. This is over a period of 24 hours. We didn't have any food for 24 hours. One old man, he tried to offer his prayers, and he stood up to offer his prayers, and in the middle of the prayer, a soldier came up to him and pointed his gun at him and shouted abuse at him, get on the floor, get on the floor, don't stand up. And this is while he's in the middle of his prayers. There was no respect for us as human beings. We were treated like animals.
What happened afterwards, after you got off the ship? And so how long did it take?
So after being held at gunpoint for pretty much almost a day, 24 hours, we were taken to the port of Ashdod, where we were processed, we were interrogated briefly. We were asked to sign a form which said, basically, I understand I have rights under Israeli law, but I renege all those rights and I want to be deported immediately after entering Israel illegally. Mm-hmm. Now, this is ridiculous because we had no interest in entering Israel. We didn't want to go anywhere near Israel. We wanted to go to Gaza. We were dragged to Israel at gunpoint by the Israeli soldiers, but now we were being charged as illegal immigrants. Anyway, many people signed this because they were just so tired. They didn't know what they were doing. They signed this, then there were statements taken and they were typed up in Hebrew, and we were asked to sign the statement in Hebrew. I didn't understand what I was signing, so I refused to sign. From there, we were searched thoroughly. Mobile phones were confiscated. Laptops on the ships were taken. Cassettes, video cassettes, cameras, anything which could provide evidence of what happened was systematically removed from our hands. We had nothing left. At night, we weren't allowed to sleep, actually. I mean, I don't know if this was just through incompetence or they were trying to deprive us of sleep, but every hour we'd have a prison guard open up the cell, and they're very heavy doors, so they make a lot of noise when they open. They open up the cell and say, okay, how many people in the cell? What nationalities? 1, 2, 3. Okay, close the door, slam the door. 1 hour later, someone else opens the cell, asks the same question. So every hour during the night, you'd be woken up. They were trying to deport people overnight as well, split us up. The people who were nationals of countries which don't have diplomatic relations were deported overnight to Jordan. And the rest of us, eventually the next morning, were put on a plane to Turkey, to Istanbul. Later on, at the airport, when we got to the airport, I saw them there. They'd been beaten up very badly and dragged to the airport. One of them, he became a friend of mine. We used him. We gave a live interview to Press TV. His name's Ken O'Keefe. He was beaten very badly. His face was covered in blood, and he's being dragged across the airport by 3 or 4 soldiers, dragged downstairs. I don't know where they were taking him. I tried to follow him, and I was dragged in the other direction by 3 or 4 Israeli policemen. And they said, oh, we're taking him for medical treatment. But, by that stage, we'd learned that everything the Israelis told us was a lie. We were told we'd get our equipment back. That was a lie. We were told we would see our lawyers. That was a lie. We were told we would get phone calls. That was a lie. So when they said they were taking him for medical treatment, I didn't believe them. And I still, to this day, I don't know where he is. I've been in contact with his wife, and she doesn't know where he is either, and their lawyer doesn't know where he is.
So do you know the names of those two people? Can you give us the names of them?
His name was Ken O'Keefe. He is, he's a dual Irish US national. But he has a Palestinian nationality as well. And on principle, he threw away his Irish passport And he said, I'm going to use my Palestinian passport. It was given to him by the Palestinian government when he broke the siege. He was on the first boats to break the siege. So he said, I'm going to show what it's like to be a Palestinian in an Israeli prison. So I'm going to use my Palestinian nationality. He's well aware of the damage that this could do to him, the implications of this, but he did it anyway. And he's a very brave person. We all respected him for that. So his name was Ken O'Keefe. The other person, he was an Irish national. I can't remember his second name. His first name was Fiacra. He was also beaten, not quite as badly as Ken, but he was beaten, and he came back on the plane with us to Istanbul, but I don't know what happened to Ken. And what's important is to remember that we've escaped. With 9 people dead, we've escaped. But the Palestinians are still there. They're still subject to the same sort of treatment. And they're still subject to the siege, which is what this whole convoy was about, to break the siege. And so we shouldn't forget them. And of course, we shouldn't forget the 9 people who gave their lives trying to protect this humanitarian convoy, which was just trying to help a people who have been trapped for several years now, 1.5 million people in the biggest open-air prison in the world.
What happened when you got to Turkey? How do you think Turkish people felt about the incident?
I was on the last plane to Turkey, and I was on the last bus out from the airport. And it was about 3 a.m. by that stage. And despite that, there were still tens of thousands of people at 3 a.m. in the morning. After having waited, I think, around 12 hours for us, there were still tens of thousands of people cheering us, crying, because they knew we had come back with, you know, many of us, well, several of us killed. They were so happy to see us, but at the same time, they were so outraged because they couldn't believe what Israel had done. And for them, it was like losing members of their own family. Of course, 8 of those people were Turkish nationals. One of them was a US national of Turkish descent. So it's really hit the Turkish people harder than it's hit a lot of other people. So there's been a lot of outrage. The funerals were held on Thursday and Friday, and there was just, as far as the eye could see, people marching on the streets. And it's quite clear that the Turkish people, at least, are adamant that this kind of relationship between Israel and Turkey cannot go on the same way it has. Something has to change. We'll see what happens, but the Turkish people, whether they're secularists or whether they're from the Islamic parties, left wing, right wing, this is the only issue, I've been told, in many years where everybody is united in their stance against Israel.
You've had the experience of seeing people who were next to you being shot by bullets. How do you think that has affected your view regarding the whole situation in Palestine?
The first person who was shot in the forehead, I knew him personally. He was in charge of accommodating the press and setting up their internet connections and helping us to get our data out, to email our newsrooms, etc.
What kind of person was he?
He was a very quiet person. You know, he sat in the corner of the press room, kept to himself. If you had a problem, we had problems using Turkish keyboards and trivial problems, he'd always come over and help you. When he was shot, I didn't witness the actual shooting, but one of my friends did. He said this man was taking pictures of the soldiers as they came down on the ropes. He wasn't even attacking, he was just taking pictures. Apparently, this is what I've been told, the soldier came down on the rope, saw him taking a picture, walked over to him, without saying anything, just shot him straight in the head and walked off. They brought him down to the main deck, and really, it was, at the time it didn't register fully, but even then it was just horrific because they'd shot him in the head, his brain had come out and it was lying on the deck.